Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. Your host, Jake Burns. We are going to talk about... We're going to focus on a long portion of this podcast with our guest, Nick Olson, talking about the Browns and Vikings and how the Vikings stack up, giving a great preview of what's to come from the Vikings. But before we get to that interview, going to talk about today's Browns news, which the biggest is that Greg Newsome has already been rolled out. Not put on the IR, so they clearly don't believe he's going to miss 3 weeks. They think there's a chance he comes back in that window, so he'll still eat a roster spot, but... they didn't want to automatically DQ him for 3 weeks with the IR designation. But the calf is obviously serious enough that they decided to rule him out here early in the week and give those quality reps that were going to go to Greedy. But you want Greedy knowing that he's going to play. And Greedy Williams will start. He will play a lot of snaps. AJ Green will be next man up if they need another outside corner. I would imagine MJ Stewart will be prepared to help out where he can help out. And you go. They signed... a guy who's Herb Miller to the practice squad. Herb Miller sounds like a pitcher for the Indians in the 1930s, but nonetheless, Herb Miller gets onto the practice squad. They're continuing to look at corner depth. You knew this could happen eventually, right? Between Denzel, Greedy, and Newsome, that somebody was going to miss a game. I don't know how long this will be. Calf injuries can be sort of finicky in that nature, so we hope that Greg Newsome doesn't miss long because he has been playing stellar football. So we'll see how the injury list shakes out. Jed Wills not practicing. It's kind of been the pattern here. Treader not practicing. Those guys should play, but if they don't, you feel better about the fact that Chris Hubbard returned, which helps you kind of ice over what could be a thing if Jed misses the game or something happens or he's off or whatever. You know, ankle, dealing with an ankle injury, you never know. Something could be off late in the week or could be off the day of the game. It's nice to have Hubbard back to feel a little bit of security there. We'll see if Hubbard does end up actually playing. There could be any sort of inactive surprise. You never know how that stuff's going to shake out. It does also seem like Michael Dunn is trending toward being an active game day player, which will help. I like Blake Hantz, not a tackle in the NFL, barely a guard. I would prefer to see Dunn and Hubbard be those guys who can step in and play. Myles Garrett, obviously named AFC Defensive Player of the Week, as he should have been, because, it's a special 4.5 sack performance. So, you know, that's always great to see him get rewarded for a lot of hard work in that game because he did play hard. And things to note as we move forward, good quotes from Grant Delpit. You should go listen to those about his comfortability in this defense, where he's at now, coming back from this injury. If you can find those quotes, a ton of great things to hear from him. Kevin Stefanski also talking about this visit back with Minnesota, what it means to him, and trying to treat it like another game, but it's not. He spent too long there. He came up in that division with all sorts of responsibilities in Minnesota, where he learned who he wanted to be and what kind of offense he wanted. And Nick Olson will give us some great insights on those things in just a minute. It's just a unique game in that sense because these two teams mirror each other so much. And it's going to be a chess match. It's going to be fun. And it'll come down to whose dudes end up, you know, the big-time names, who steps up and makes plays when it matters. Because I would imagine both offense and defensive sides of the football will be pretty schemed up. They know what each other's going to try to run. So who's going to make a play when all the chips fall? So we'll see. You know, other than Greg Newsome, no other major injury things to talk about. We'll get insights from Nick on the injury list coming up here in a second. If you want to follow Nick, he's at Nick Olson NFL. He writes for Viking Territory, Zone Coverage, Minnesota. He's great. It's a good interview. It's long, but it's a good interview, and you're really going to know everything there is to know about Minnesota. So let's get over to that interview right now with Nick Olson. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, welcoming in Nick Olson. I think Nick does some of the best work on the Vikings. If you pay attention to his Twitter feed, it is constant just chatter and then film breakdowns and different things that I think kind of correlate to what I do with the Browns. Nick, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. It is Victory Wednesday in Vikings Twitter world. So I don't know if that's a thing, Victory Wednesday, but yeah, I'm doing good.
It's good. I mean, you got to trust me. We understand. We're starting to get a little spoiled after going 11-5 and now kind of off to a nice start. But you take your wins where you can, man. You got to enjoy every single one of these things, right?
Oh, absolutely. They never get old.
They never get old. So listen, let's hit leadoff. We're going to talk about the 1-2 start, and I think it's probably one of the best 1-2 teams in football right now. But there's a nugget that was dropped on another Blue Wire podcast called The Rebuild. Okay. Matthew Collar comes on, talks about how Kevin Stefanski was the next guy in Minnesota. And if after the 2019 wild card game where Minnesota goes into New Orleans and pulls that great upset, Kyle Rudolph, right? Catches that touchdown in overtime.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, if that doesn't happen and New Orleans blows out, which was the expectation, blows out Minnesota at home, there was chatter, pretty confident chatter, that there was going to be some move with Mike Zimmer, whether that was trading him to Dallas or letting him go, and Kevin Stefanski was going to be the guy to step in. Is there merit to that?
What I have heard and what has been reported is that there's definitely merit to that. The Vikings were extremely high on Kevin Stefanski. I think a lot of people really respected him in the building. And Zimmer has a lot of respect as well, and people love him. But it was kind of a crossroads where people were thinking, if this doesn't go the right way, maybe it's time to make a change, and maybe it's time to, you know, not let this young wunderkind out the door. Maybe this is the move. The other thing is that from what I've heard reported, and from what I've heard from people who would be in the know, is that the Cowboys were actually very interested in bringing back Mike Zimmer. And they were willing to trade some assets for Mike Zimmer. So that was an interesting what if. Of course, it never came to fruition because the Vikings pull off this incredible upset, go into the Superdome against a 13-3 team, pull together this crazy game plan that involves Anderson Dejo, who Browns fans probably don't remember too fondly, but he wound up playing slot cornerback against Michael Thomas, and it was like really effective. Ryan Ramczyk, Danielle Hunter beat him for 2 sacks. So it was just a crazy defensive game plan. And they came away with a major playoff win. And so, of course, after that, you know, they were willing to stick things out with Zimmer and let Kevin go on to green pastures in Cleveland. But yeah, it's a very interesting what if things had gone differently. NFL landscape could look very different.
It could look very different. The ultimate upside down is you saying that Sendejo was an effective player in the slot against Michael Thomas, of all people. So
I think you might have lost all credibility.
Listen, you might have lost all credibility with Browns.
Right, go back and watch it. It's like we were just as shocked that worked. So.
That's ironic, man. Small world. It's a big circular thing. And it is. The outcome here going into this game, not the outcome, but the thought, and it's right, is like this is a full circle sort of feeling, right? There seems to be a lot of parallel now. The Browns were trying to hire... was it Dennison or who was it, the assistant GM there in Minnesota?
George Payton, who's now in Denver.
Yeah, there was like the Browns were trying to bring in Stefanski and Payton simultaneously, and there was just all this pull from Minnesota. And yeah, I mean, as you would understand, it's like they started to see that this is an offense we can run. We like what they do. Their personnel kind of aligns two wide receivers that are effective. So it is a like a big, huge welcome back for a lot of similar thought processes and people who were intertwined in that fate of the NFL that you were talking about just a minute ago. So it should be a really fun game. And with that,
you know what's interesting? Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but just like one really interesting angle to it is how Kevin Stefanski came to be a wide zone guy, as he wasn't raised in it. He was, he came up under like Brad Childress, Andy Reid Tree. He came up under a lot of different coaches, and he always, he knew Gary Kubiak from afar, and he always thought like, man, if I got a chance to run that offense, that seems like it could be something we could do some real damage with in the NFL. And he was, I think he was like quarterback's coach or offensive assistant on the Vikings back in, I want to say 2017, 2016 or something. Mm-hmm. And that's where he and Clint Kubiak overlapped as like offensive assistants or something, low on the totem pole, but working their way up, both really impressing guys. And it was first Stefanski, when he was promoted offensive coordinator, he called back his old pal Clint Kubiak and said, hey, we're thinking about, doing more wide zone stuff. Are you interested in coming aboard with bringing maybe on your dad as well? And we could like learn how to actually install this wide zone offense, this boot action stuff that I'm so interested in. And so now we're seeing not just you know, back then they were like the young guys, and now, you know, it's a head coach, and now Clint Kubiak is the offensive coordinator for the Vikings. So it's a cool, they were friends and close back then, and so it's a cool reunion for them too as well.
Yeah, and I always remember Harrison Smith tying it all together when Stefanski's like, I think we got something here, was when Harrison Smith came up to him and said, hey man, this is brutal to defend. Like, we can't tell what you're doing, right? I've always read that quote, and that's something that Kevin's even pointed back to since he'd been in Cleveland, that a defender as elite as Harrison could come up and say that, a guy who studies the game as well as anybody. And that's when you know, like, okay, yeah, this is good. This is what we want to
sign things. Yeah, sign that things are certainly working when you can confuse him. So, absolutely. Yeah, it's good stuff. It should be a fun rematch, a good reunion of different sorts of concepts. So I'm excited.
Yeah, the evolution of what Cleveland's done based on what they thought they were going, I thought they were going to do, has been really interesting. They started in one direction and have figured out, oh, we have these really elite guards and we should probably do some different things. And it's fun in that sense, because there's what Kevin wants to be and what Bill Callahan is. I would imagine Bill Callahan has pulled him aside and they've talked through this. Like, this is what we should be doing as far as run game goes, and how they've married all of that. And it'll be a fun watch. It'll be a fun watch on both sides. I think it'll be great for Minnesota fans to see some different things, but some similar things. And likewise for Cleveland to get, you know, especially where they want to get offensively. I think Minnesota's gone on a really great path, and they have been. And I'm sure they will continue to be. They're 1-2, but it's not every man's 1-2. I mean, you know, the Cincinnati game, I'll give you the table here to just kind of walk us through what happened. Just briefly synopsis the Cincinnati loss, the Arizona loss, and then what happened last week, if you can.
Yeah, Cincinnati game was interesting. It was a close game that really it went to overtime, and it came down to the Vikings drove down into Cincinnati territory, and then Dalvin Cook had an unlucky fumble at the worst moment around the 40-yard line, and Cincinnati was able to drive down and kick the game-winning field goal. So it was an interesting matchup. Jamar Chase went for over 100 yards. Bashaud Breeland has kind of struggled a little bit at outside cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson. So some out of the gate struggles. And then Cincinnati did a lot of interesting things where, you know, we're seeing this more, and this gets back to the Bill Callahan conversation. The Vikings, like the Browns, their identity is still a wide zone boot act play action offense. But now the book is out on the fronts you want to run. You want to run bare fronts and 6-1 fronts to mug up the gaps and not allow teams to stretch the field and give your linebackers a clear shot at the running back, and, you know, not allow any of those cutback lanes. So you saw a lot of that from the Bengals, who kind of had the personnel and the horses to run those fronts. And so they weren't able to get as much going on the ground. They were still able to move the ball. Obviously, it came down to an overtime game. But yeah, they weren't able to pull that one away. And then next week in Arizona, back-to-back road games to start the season, you know, Kyler's making crazy plays. It was a bit of a shootout. Comes down to a game-winning field goal. It was 37 yards, and in true Vikings tradition, you know, the kick was wide right. So the 37-yarder was no good, and Arizona walked away with a win. So, yeah, I think it's right to say that they're probably a little bit better than the 1-2 record. I'm not saying they're an amazing team or anything, because they've got their struggles, especially on the defensive personnel and the secondary coming together. But a couple tough breaks at the end of the first two games, followed up by a big win over the Seahawks. It's interesting. They're 1-2, but they have, like, I think the 11th best point differential. You know, they're obviously positive. I think they're +9 in the point differential column. So it's an interesting team. We're still trying to figure out if we're good or not.
I think it's on the right path. I think that as far as being tied into point differential, things like that, that can always be a little misleading. But especially because Cleveland last year had a negative point differential and still made the playoffs and had a really solid record. So it can be weird like that. I think Minnesota's right on the precipice of really turning a corner. They could easily be 3-0. That's not deniable. So there's definitely a good football team in Minnesota, and that's what we're going to try to have a conversation around. So we'll start offensively. It revolves around Kirk Cousins. It has for a while now. Listen, I've got a Browns fan base here, and I don't want to make them mad because they want to continue to think that Baker's ceiling is infinitely higher. But I think that lost in the shuffle of what Kirk, I think Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback and always have. And I think you can get really good things from Kirk. Are you going to get masterpiece out of structure plays? No, I don't think that's going to happen. And I do think that Baker has some better physical traits, but the mental aspect of the game is where Kirk stands out, and he is killing it right now. I think he's a hair under 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. So my question, Nick, is sort of built around, you're getting the best version of a quarterback for this offense, in my opinion. And is that something that Minnesota, the people around the organization and the people following the team are comfortable with? Because the alternative is letting a guy like that go and then fishing in a pond of mystery that is your next quarterback, and you can really muck that up. You can really, really, really mess it up. So I'm just sort of curious where you guys are with Kirk, because I'm sure you haven't answered this question 75 million times, but like where you're at with him, and do you feel like you can win a Super Bowl with him?
Yeah, it's such an interesting conversation. And it's interesting because I feel like the answer changes all the time, depending on, how Kirk's last game went. It's so interesting. Kirk does... he does so many things so well that are easy to take for granted. He's an exceptional, accurate thrower of the football. When he has a clean pocket and things are in rhythm, he's exceptionally good at getting the ball out on time. His footwork is pristine. He's able to manipulate safeties. He sees the field very well. He goes through his progressions very quickly. It's kind of like, if this were two decades ago, he would be thought of as like one of like the prototype pocket passers. He does a lot of things really well. He doesn't necessarily he doesn't have a bad arm, but he doesn't have like the world's like biggest arm, especially at, the one thing Baker does, I think, really well is he's got a strong arm, but he doesn't always need a clean pocket to do it. Kirk's got a strong arm, but if you muddy the pocket, if you force him to change the arm angle, or you not allow him to follow through completely on his base, that's where you see the arm talent drop off a little bit. So Kirk's not a flashy guy, but he does so many things so well. And when you see the efficiency on the field, I mean, right now he's playing just essentially mistake-free football. And he's still managing to like get the positives as well. So that's really impressive to see right now. I think the general tenor of the fan base is like, yeah, let's sign him up. Like we can totally live with this. Like we're fine. I don't care if it's another, $45 million a year contract. Like this is Vikings fans have seen a lot of bad quarterbacks in their day, so they're willing to live with it. I think especially now, part of the analysis, I think, as well is like, this offseason, going through free agency, you see how a quarterback earning that much money can hamstring you, can keep you from signing certain free agents, can sort of be a lodestone around where your team wants to go long term, can make you feel like you're not building towards something necessarily and you're just sort of circling the drain. But now, especially compared to all these teams drafting these young, exciting first-round quarterbacks, we see so many first-round quarterbacks go early in the draft. But now you're seeing so many of them struggle. You said Justin Fields get, sacked, what was it, 9 times with against your Browns? So you've seen Trey Lance sitting, Trevor Lawrence, as much as he was hyped as a prospect, he's really struggling out of the gate. So I think all those things, and even like Mac Jones looks fine, but, he's not lighting the world on fire the way that like even Baker did when he was a rookie or Herbert did last year. So I think seeing the alternative right now to being like, if we were starting Justin Fields, where would we be? Yeah, it's a lot cheaper, but also I think we would be a significantly worse football team without Kirk Cousins. I think right now, if you ask the team or you ask people in the front office or you ask the average fan, they would say, yeah, let's sign me up for more of this. But the question is always like, and this is the problem, is like, this is as good as it gets with Kirk Cousins, is this mistake-free football with an improved offensive line. Things look clean. He's got some receivers to go to, and he's making the most of them. But the thing with having a Kirk Cousins-level quarterback is, in the back of your mind, you're always worried about like, okay, when is he going to turn into a pumpkin? When is this ride going to end? He's had lots of hot streaks. But that's why, that's why he didn't wind up getting re-upped in Washington. That's why he was a free agent. That's why he goes through these ups and downs in Minnesota where fans vacillate between we're in love with the guy and we want to build him a statue and let's get rid of the guy as soon as we can. So check in with me. The long-winded way of saying check in with me in a few months and we'll see if this current streak continues. Because right now he's playing about as good football as he ever has. But that's always the worry with these kinds of quarterbacks is when is he going to come back down to earth if he does. So I guess we'll see.
It sounds miserable, but awesome at the same time. Like, I think Baker has some better traits. I think he can run better than Kirk can. I think he can drive the football with more velocity, but I do think Kirk has produced better, obviously, of late. I mean, Baker's window of time in the NFL and Kirk's and who he's been around are obviously vastly different because Kirk's had, young Shanahan, young McVay, and worked his way into this system with Kubiak and all of that. So I don't know that Baker's going in that direction. It seems to me like he is. Can he be a better version of Kirk? I don't know. Right now, the numbers don't bear that. and I don't think it's fair to say that, but can he be a better version of that? And I think a better version of that is pretty dang good still. Like, I still think if Kirk is playing well, and again, the streakiness of Kirk is kind of the streakiness of Baker, if those guys are playing well and the rest of your team collectively is playing well, I do think you could win Super Bowls with them. We watch Jimmy Garoppolo doing the same thing, and I think they're both better than Jimmy Garoppolo, be a post throw from a win in a Super Bowl. So it's doable, right? But your roster structure is a little more challenging. You can't make up for as many holes as you possibly could with Pat or, again, you know, the guys who are taking over modern football that are doing it uniquely. I think the Herberts are kind of creeping into that. Justin Herbert's creeping into that range too. So just something to monitor. It's a fun question on my end. Maybe not so fun for you to answer as often as you have to, but the parallels there are interesting. So moving to running back, Dalvin Cook was out last week. I respect Alexander Mattison like crazy, but Dalvin is unique. He's in the Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry threshold of guys. Like, there's no doubt. And just sort of wondering how healthy he is, whether you think he's going to play, and then sort of assessing where they're at running back.
He seems confident. He had a presser today where he seems confident that he will play. But it's one of those things where you can't say too confidently just yet that it'll be Dalvin Cook. I think he was a limited participant in practice today. So keep monitoring that. It does sound like if on his current trajectory, he expects to play. But, you know, take it one practice at a time. And right now it's hard to say confidently one way or not. That said, gun to my head, if I had to guess, I would say he's full go on Sunday.
Good deal. Is a full go? Well, I mean, we'll see if he's 100%, but is Madison that much of a drop off? Like, you know, what up, running backs don't matter. Like, do you guys like him that much?
Madison's a talented back, and there's a reason they were willing to spend a third rounder on him. At the same time, Dalvin does. They're different styles of quarterbacks or running backs. Dalvin is a better running back. He's more explosive, especially in the open field. He'll take those like 10 yarders and turn them into 20 yarders, and he'll take the 20 yarders and turn them into 40 yarders. So he's got more breakaway speed. He's a little bit better in his vision and his footwork and setting up blocks. I think Madison's improved a lot in that area. But I think Dalvin's just one of the best at making his offensive line look better than they are, setting up his blocks really well, pressing up one hole until the linebacker's in the wrong one, and then bursting out of the other hole. He's such a good fit with this wide zone scheme. So he does a lot of those things well. Madison's got a little more like truck power. Madison loves to hurdle guys. If you see him in the game, he'll love to like bait guys into going low and then jump over them. So if you see Madison, don't be surprised when you see that. But different styles of running backs. I think Madison's a really good back too. You saw him go for almost 200 all-purpose yards last week. So the offense didn't necessarily skip a beat. That said, I do think there's a difference between like anytime you got like just an elite level back like Dalvin or Nick Chubb, anytime someone like that goes down, you're going to see whoever is filling their shoes is going to have a tough time measuring up. So Dalvin's definitely somebody got to keep an eye on, because when he's healthy, the offense runs through him.
Yeah, it's similar. It's just funny because Kareem Hunt will do a lot of the vertical jump over people stuff too. It's again parallel and two really good running backs, man. Like, it's just wild. Like that. I'll ask too. I know these two have structured offense very similarly. The big difference was they both hate 11 personnel. They're one of the lowest in the league at 11 personnel. The Titans joined them last year too, but they were more 21 personnel in Minnesota. Are they still using CJ Ham a ton?
Yeah, they love CJ Ham. He's a big focal point of their offense, and a lot of the fun, unique things they do in their run design are centered around what CJ Ham can do. They like bringing guys into the backfield, and they like to set it up, and it's sort of how they add their own unique creative flavor of the wide zone game, is how they insert the back, the fullback into the design, whether they'll run wind back with him or whether they'll sort of move him out into space or you know, who he'll end up blocking. So he's a big part of their run game. I will say this year they've had the emergence of this guy, a 2020 draft pick, KJ Osborne, who I barely made the team last year and looked, I don't know, like he was just not going to do much. And all of a sudden this year, he spent the offseason training with Jefferson and I think Odell Beckham as well. And it kind of shows, because now he looks like a legitimately good wide receiver three. So you're seeing actually a lot more 11 personnel from the Vikings this year. Part of that has to do with Irv Smith Jr., the tight end they were very excited about out of Alabama, just 22 years old. So they were expecting big things from him this year, but he's out for the year, unfortunately. Yeah. So there's limited tight end depth. So less 12 personnel, but you're still seeing a heavy sprinkling of CJ Ham, but you're also seeing some 11 personnel. You're even seeing some 10 personnel because they also signed D.D. Westbrook, and they'd like to get him out there too. So, yeah, it's a weird offense, this Clint Kubiak style of offense. The personnel groupings are, I mean, they still like to be heavy, and they'll still, you know, they'll still see 13 personnel. They traded a fourth rounder for Chris Herndon from the Jets earlier. So they still want to be multiple. They still want to get heavy personnel in there, but they're also not afraid, especially on third downs, to spread you out, to go four wide or to go three by one and have it be four wide receivers, or line up, you know, Amir Abdullah, who's their sort of scat back that they like, and line him up out wide and have him run receiver routes as well. So they throw a lot of weird stuff at you, probably similar stuff to what you're familiar with Kevin Stefanski, because it was the same stuff in 2019.
Yeah, other than the 10 personnel, with everything else you said there, I could pull out your names and I could insert Cleveland names, and it's the same stuff. Dimitri Felton is the jack-of-all-trades hybrid guy, like Amir Abdullah. It's the same thing, man. It's crazy. So when they do go two tight ends, I've seen some clips, I think, from our good friend Brandon Thorne, studies blocking game in the NFL as good as anybody. Tyler Conklin playing pretty well, too.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was not as high as on him as a lot of fans going into the season. He kind of struck me as just a guy, but the part of the reason was I sort of just saw him as a pure move tight end who wasn't good enough as a receiver to like stand out. But now he really seems to be taking on duties in line. He's playing with better leverage. His punch is a lot better. He's basically able to take on defensive ends for, you know, in a pinch. And you know, when you can do that, you can also crack on linebackers. So when you can line up as a true Y and have that versatility, it makes the offense a lot better. And it's a disappointment we're not able to see him along with Irv Smith Jr., because I do think Tyler Conklin's off to a good year. And you know, when you combine that ability to block with the fact that, you know, he's a good receiver as well. He's not, you know, like most inline tight ends. He's not going to, you know, burn down the seam or something with his speed or something. But he's got enough athletic ability to run with guys downfield, or you saw a few times this year, you'll see him sort of on a crossing route, and he has the ability to establish leverage, and he has the ability to win at the catch point. He's got a big frame like a lot of tight ends. And when you can sort of establish leverage, even if you're not going to like break away necessarily, that's going to be enough. With a big catch radius, and then he's got some yak ability as well. So they like to get him the ball as well, so don't be surprised if you see a heavy sprinkling of Tyler Conklin in there as well.
Yeah, I really liked him coming out of college. I thought he was going to be a player. And let's shift wide receiver. Go ahead. Did you have one add there? Did I miss that?
No, go for it.
All right, yeah. I mean, talk about the dudes at wide receiver. I mean, are Thielen Jefferson playing as well as they ever have? I know you mentioned KJ and Didi, but the focal point is 18 and 19, right?
Yeah, definitely. Justin Jefferson, they treated him, coming out of camp, they treated him like he was their best player on the entire team. I mean, Danielle Hunter is up there as well, but like, there was like, when he sprained his AC joint, it was like they almost canceled practice. Like there was just a hush went over the crowd. And from that point on, they basically treated all the veterans and they wrapped them in bubble wrap. So Jefferson actually, he came off to a little bit of a slow start. He's dropped a couple passes here and there, which is just a little. I don't think it's a long term problem with him or anything, but I don't know. Sometimes elite receivers go through weird spells I remember Diggs did the same thing, where Diggs had some of the best hands I'd ever seen on a receiver I've seen play for the Vikings. And then he had one year where he had like 10 drops or something. It's like, this is not, I don't know where this is coming from. So Jefferson's dropped a couple passes. But then this last week, man, he really came on strong. He had like 10 targets and he brought in like 8 of them for over 100 yards. He's putting on another route running clinic. He's such a unique route runner where ESPN had this funny insider article where somebody described Justin Jefferson as Eurostep Gumby, which I thought was the funniest
great.
Like scout, because he has this weird sort of herky jerky rocker step, Eurostep, that he loves to get open with at the top of routes, and it works for him. But he's also, the Gumby's great too, because he's sort of long limbed framed. He kind of has this like sliding back and forth motion to his routes, but I don't know, it works really well for him. He gets He gets separation. He had some really great routes last week against the Seahawks that got him wide open on a whip route or on a curl route where the defensive back was respecting him a little too much vertically. And so he just stopped on a dime and the guy just flew past him, almost fell over. So he's a really talented player and they know it. And then Adam Thielen doesn't necessarily have the same, he's not going to buy an acre of space necessarily with his route running, although he's a very talented route runner. But he does so many of the little things so well. You look back at like the way he fights with his hands on vertical routes downfield to create separation at the catch point, his late hands, the way he'll sort of establish leverage and then use that to set up two-way goes in his route stems. Just a very talented. He's got some of the best. They're both very good at the releases, but Adam Thielen, I think, is just one of the better releases in the NFL. So they're both very talented players. So they're a focal point. It's a lot of teams think about Dalvin Cook, but I think Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, they're very confident in those top two wide receivers. And then I mentioned a little bit, but it's nice to see KJ Osborne coming along strong as well to give them a third option. He's been kind of, especially on third downs, he's been a little bit of Mr. Third Down, a guy who can, if the team is worrying so much about Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne up against, their number three corner can usually come down with a big reception as well. So the offense has come out very strong, and those three guys are a big reason why.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson, the rare one-for-one trade there that works with Diggs so well, so unique in that sense. So good stuff there. You're talking O-line. I know that I think Zimmer, I'd read a quote, Zim thought they played their best football of the year last week. And you're talking investment, man, like, similar to Cleveland, like real tangible investment. Brian O'Neill, they picked 2018 second round. They've already extended him. You got Garrett Bradbury was their first round pick in 19. Ezra Cleveland was a 2020 second round pick. Wyatt Davis was a third. I know he's maybe not starting right now, but he was a third round pick in 21. Darisaw this year, was the first round pick. And I don't know, I think Rashad Hill, you correct me if I'm wrong, is still starting there. Talk about the O-line. They've clearly invested in it. And it's early on here paying pretty clear dividends.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they have invested the second most draft capital over the last 4 years into the offensive line. And for the longest time, this has been a bugaboo with Vikings fans. It's just that the offensive line has been so bad for so long. And we're finally starting to see some dividends being paid this year. The offensive line, I don't want to say it's good or anything. I think Rashad Hill is still a major liability at left tackle. But we'll see if Christian Darisaw, interestingly, he was a full participant today for the first time in practice all year. So he's been coming along pretty slowly. They've been stringing him along. He's had this nagging groin injury that sort of he had surgery in January, actually, and it just was re-aggravated and has been bugging him for a while. So he's finally a full participant. There's a real possibility that Christian Darisaw's first start comes on Sunday. So that'll be interesting to monitor. As far as the rest of the guys, they're so athletic. Ezra Cleveland was originally a left tackle at Boise State, moves extremely well. He's in his second year. He's still pretty raw. As a converted tackle, you might expect, sometimes his pass sets aren't great or sometimes he's a little too overeager with his punches. And, he's not he's still developing an anchor, I think, to stand up against those really stout defensive tackles. So bull rushes is actually a theme across the entire offensive line can get them into trouble. But really talented player, and especially you'll see it on screens. So Garrett Bradbury, it's the same sort of he just has. Bradbury can struggle one-on-one when up against like a big nose guard, but Bradbury makes some of the most impressive blocks on the team. Downfield on screens, he's just so good in the screen game, and he has such incredible athleticism on reach blocks and stuff. When he'll reach a three technique, and it's just like jaw dropping stuff to see from a center in the NFL against like an NFL three tech. So kind of an up and down player, but like, man, the highs are really highs. But at the same time, like, he'll also get like walked back into the pocket for a sack pretty frequently. So the highs and lows with Bradbury. Ole Udo is a really interesting. He was a sixth round pick 2019 out of Elon. A really developmental guy that they really liked, and he's finally starting. And that was like the big thing is like, who is this Ole Udo guy? I thought it was going to be Wyatt Davis starting at right guard. What's happening here? But he's looked really good. He's like, he doesn't look like your typical guard because he's massive. He looks like a Trent Brown type tackle, like just a huge dude. And you wouldn't think it would work because his punch is very wide and his pads are still pretty high. But I don't know. He makes it work. He's so strong and he's so athletic that, like, I don't know. He's able to move guys. And when they do more like power stuff, or when they do more duo stuff, when he's doing more drive blocks, the difference in power between him and like Bradbury or Cleveland is pretty evident. And then Brian O'Neill, not to belabor the point, but he's a talented guy. They paid him top money. He's playing really well. He's the only tackle, I think, per Pro Football Focus who hasn't given up a single pressure so far this year. So that's been impressive to see. I don't think he's actually played as well as that stat would suggest, but he's a very solid tackle. He's a very good player. He's very athletic as well. And he's kind of like he's the star player of this offensive line. So altogether, you know, they've invested a lot into it. They're still young players. A lot of them are still learning. But we're starting to see pieces of the vision of where this could go long term. So it's certainly not, you know, a Bill Callahan. It's certainly not the Browns, what the Browns have right now. But for it to simply be not suck and be mediocre, possibly even average, is like, it's really exciting stuff for a lot of us Vikings fans.
So. Yeah, and they invested the right way. I mean, you have to put your effort and energy into it, or it's just not going to rectify itself. So kudos to them for that. And, you know, Ezra Cleveland was a guy that the Browns were really kind of floating toward when the 20 draft happened. They took Jed Wills, but that was a guy connected to Cleveland too. And there's just many names that pop up on these two rosters that cross over, and how those guys, that'll be a fascinating matchup. If O'Neill gets, you know, if he gets Miles or Clowney and they move those guys everywhere, you know, that's the thing about the Browns defensive line right now is, you know, Malik McDowell comes out of nowhere, pops back onto the NFL scene, is playing great football, Malik Jackson. And that's how, like, we were worried, because we're going to talk about Sheldon Richardson here in a little bit. Like, they let Sheldon Richardson go, and they let Larry Ogunjobi go, and it's like, how are they going to get this D-line right? Well, then all of a sudden Malik McDowell comes on the scene, and he's taken off, and him and Malik Jackson, and they rotate Clowney and Miles inside, and Tack McKinley outside, and that is going to be a really fun matchup. Because if you are going to stop Kirk Cousins, you better not let him know exactly what you're going to do in coverage, so the ball doesn't get out quick, and you better get pressure. That's the answer. So... just like Baker, too. I mean, God, it's no secret. It's most quarterbacks in the NFL. You better make them double clutch the football a little bit. But that's what's going to win or lose the point battle on that side. Let's switch to defense. It's some familiar names. Everson Griffin's back. But, you know, it's led by Danielle Hunter up front. Michael Pierce is back. I think he was on the COVID list last year, right? He sat out, I believe.
That's right. He opted out last year.
So, yeah, Dalvin Tomlinson with Michael Pierce and Sheldon Richardson's rotating in. And then I don't know if Everson's starting or Weatherly has kind of gotten the right side DN snaps. But yeah, this is an interesting group that is many familiar names. We'll go one by one, D-line to linebacker to secondary. But yeah, hit, what's going on with the D-line? I think they're getting some pretty good pressure, and Danielle Hunter's playing contract type money, right? He's got to make a move this year.
Yeah, definitely. It was an interesting offseason drama with Danielle Hunter. He was like holding out for a little bit, but then he ended up getting his contract worked out, resolved. But he will be up for... an early extension. I think he'll still have 2 years left, but he'll be up for, they'll probably give him an extension if he continues playing the way he is right now. He's the best player on the defense. He's 26 years old. He missed all of last year with a herniated disc in his neck, but he looks back and in his prime. Just a really special play. You know, I don't want to compare anybody to Myles Garrett, but just that level of just a unique combination of athleticism and length and like the body of a Greek god, like with the technical prowess to put it to use against offensive linemen. Just a freakishly talented player. And he was ramping up a little bit in the first couple games, but man, against Kyler, he had 3 sacks. And then he had like 8 pressures last week, despite the fact that Russ was getting the ball out really quick. The Seahawks were. So Hunter is kind of the star of the show, a really talented player stout against the run. And when he gets to pin his ears back, just a monster when he gets to, you know, put that athleticism on display. But also like technically like really proficient too. Like he's not just a speed rusher. He'll dip inside. He'll rip. He loves to set up counters. He's really like a natural counter. He's really able to like naturally build up his pass rush repertoire now. Like before coming out of LSU, he had no idea what he was doing. So to see him now is like a technician is exciting to watch. Opposite him, you've got DJ Wonnum, who's a developmental guy. Was a fourth round pick, I think, a couple years last year. Got a lot of snaps as a rookie, but really a developmental guy. Kind of in the mold of the Vikings like to find these guys with length and some athleticism who they can develop in the Danielle Hunter mold. But, you know, it's a lot of guys who, like Stephen Weatherly was the same way, who's now back with the team, you know, who have length and who they can put to use if they think they can coach them up. Wanham has struggled, I think. He gets washed out in the run game, and he has trouble holding up at the point of attack, trouble sustaining blocks or coming off blocks quick enough. He's got some juice as a pass rusher, and you can tell he's starting to learn how to put his length to use, how to put his burst to use. So he's an interesting player, but he's probably one of more of the weak links. Between those two, you got Michael Pierce, who's one of the stronger dudes in the NFL, just 340 pounds he's listed, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's bigger. He's like kind of like the traditional true like Vince Wilfork, zero tech nose guard. So really fun to see him. They run a lot of tight front now these days, especially against wide zone teams like the Browns kind of are. And I know they're shifting to more power these days, but he's a really stout run defender. He just does not get moved very much, even against double teams. But he's also really quick. He's actually had a few sacks in these first few weeks, which has been surprising to see from your, 350-pound nose guard. But he's got some juice, and it's not just like bull rushes too. Like he'll give a stutter step and then rip inside, or he swum a dude for a sack in week two or something, which is you don't always see that from the big guys. Dalvin Tomlinson, they signed from the New York Giants. He's another one of those big dudes, kind of more of a nose guard, but they're lining him up more as a 4-eye when they're doing their bare fronts, or as a 3 technique when they're doing their more 4-3 under that they like to do. So he's not as much of a penetrator the way Sheldon Richardson is when he rotates in. He's more of just a hold the gap, slow things down, allow the linebackers to come to the ball if it's a run play, or press the pocket if it's play action. So he's a good player, nothing flashy, but, you know, sound fundamental guy, doesn't make many mistakes and brings some juice. You're obviously familiar with Sheldon Richardson, who he gets pressure. You know, he's so good looping as a pass rusher on stunts, and he plays with high motor, high effort. So, I mean, you guys are familiar with him. And Everson Griffin is the other guy probably worth mentioning. Just, he's 34 years old now, so twilight of his career. But, man, he's still got some pass rush juice. He's still got a fantastic spin move, really good speed to power, can still win. He's still got enough burst to win to the outside, too. So they bring in a lot of different ways in the pass rush and the defensive line. So especially compared to how depleted they were last year. The Vikings lost to Neil Hunter. Michael Pierce opted out. Everson Griffin walked away. So, and they had a lot of these young developmental guys. So it's a completely new look this year. So it's been fun to watch, especially, compared to how much they struggled last year.
It's an interesting group, one that is going to – I mean, I think the Browns are pretty solid up front. We all know that, but they – and the Bears are – it's so interesting because the Bears are gifted up front as well. So it was like a battle of titans, but Jed Wills is obviously dealing with a pretty bum ankle at left tackle, and J.C. Treader's kind of fighting the veteran week-by-week deal, and he got a pretty nasty knee hit. So we'll see how healthy they are, because they have to protect Baker. Gave up 5 sacks last week. And most of those were not the variety where the quarterback was holding on to the ball too long. So that will swing the game one way or the other. Linebacker, familiar names, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr, and then Nick Vigil, former AFC North, former Bengal, playing pretty well, I would imagine, or at least glimpses I've saw. So how's the linebacker room looking?
Yeah, it's interesting. Kendricks is still a really good player. He's a fantastic coverage linebacker who's got a great nose for the ball, flies around the field, makes a lot of plays. He's very good in coverage, whether that's, like roboting off play action and finding carrying guys vertically. You've seen him do that against some pretty good wide receivers down the field. But he's also he's got a good nose for the ball. He's very smart. He knows where the quarterback likes to go with the ball. So he's great in coverage. He's a little undersized, so he's more of like their off ball guy. Anthony Barr, if he's healthy, he's actually missed the first 3 games of the year with a lingering knee issue. He was limited today, but they keep hinting that he's really soon. Obviously, they didn't put him on IR, so they weren't expecting him to miss 3 games. But it's sort of like a chronic issue. It's actually kept him out of most of training camp as well. So, but at the same time, he was a full go in minicamp or something. So don't have a lot of clarity into when he'll be back, but obviously he changes things because he's a true Sam hybrid, almost defensive end type player. And especially when they run more of the tight front stuff they're doing, You know, he's, you know, a true like, you know, hybrid edge defender type guy, because he's 6'5", 255 pounds, but still like he's a top 10 pick, and he has the athleticism to go with not just the frame, but like, you know, a 4.6 40, and he ran even faster at his pro day and stuff. So phenomenal athlete, really smart player, good tackler. When he's on the field, he allows Zimmer to do a lot of fun things in the blitz designs and the blitz schemes. You probably don't want to block him with your running back because he's too good with that. He's not necessarily going to threaten, you know, a good left tackle or anything. But he's got the size and length to do a lot of things and not just be he brings a lot of schematic value, I think, to the team. Where's the green dot too when he's healthy? Nick Vigil, a fun player to watch. He flies through the ball. He gives a lot of high effort plays. He is also his run fits have been giving me fits. He's kind of frustrating to watch. He'll get out of his gap and give up explosives on the ground. And he's, he's a little, has trouble coming off blocks or making plays in the run game as well. Sometimes gets out of his spot in coverage or isn't able to find where the quarterback wants to go with the ball when he has to drop back. So there are issues with him, and there's a reason that, obviously Anthony Barr would be starting over him if he's full go. So, linebacker core, I think is really talented when they're firing at all cylinders and they're fully healthy, but that's obviously a question heading into Sunday.
They'll be challenged because Cleveland leads the league in 13 personnel, and they'll never stop. I don't care if Stefanski has five Odell Beckhams. He just is addicted to tight end play, man. They love it. So I do imagine you'll see quite a bit of base recommendations coming down from the headset because they'll be trying to match, and they'll mix in 12 personnel too. Browns do run some 11. They're still about that 40% number through 3 weeks, but they prefer to get those big fellas on the field and block and get those two running backs moving downhill. And which probably sounds familiar to you, but anyway, let's talk about the secondary. I would imagine you would say this is the weaker part of the group collectively, and you know, you still have guys, I guess, the weaker part looking forward as you kind of project out where the Vikings are going. I'll let you take it, go wherever you want to go with it, tell me how they're doing, and sort of where, because like as I look at things, I'd imagine this is where you're probably going to see a lot of investment in the upcoming drafts.
Yeah, and I think that's right. It's so tough. They drafted Jeff Gladney last year along with Justin Jefferson in the first round, and then he was you know, dumb and domestic abuse, and they got cut. So and that on top of Mike Hughes, who they drafted, what was that, 2018 or something draft, just succumbed to injuries and was never able to get available. So when you invest two first round picks and they're both off the team, you struggle a little bit. So that's definitely the weak spot of this roster. They were able to sign Patrick Peterson, who's having a bit of a bounce back year. I think he's played really well. But, you know, coverage is a weak link thing. You know, you'd only take some. We saw this last year with the Browns. You know, they were so good they had lots of good corners, but then it only took like one buster screen to whether it's Jalen Johnson and whoever else. Like, it only takes like one bad cornerback to spoil the whole bunch. And that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit. Bashaud Breeland has struggled a lot. He's lets guys run past him. He's never been the fastest cornerback. So he has struggled keeping up on deep verticals, whether that's a fade or he has to carry a guy, you know, up the field on a go route or something. Struggles there. He's been a little bit late to react on other routes. He's given up penalties, kind of struggled in all areas. I think he's Pro Football Focus's lowest graded cornerback, which I don't necessarily love their cornerback grades very much. But when you're that bad, something's clearly going very bad. So, he struggled a lot. Mackenzie Alexander is their nickelback. If you see a lot of 12, 13 personnel or 21, maybe won't see as much of him as you might expect with other teams. But he's a good cornerback when he can, like, man up and he knows his assignment, but the problem is he's prone to mental errors. So when you see busted coverages, he's often a culprit. So he's a good player, just a matter of making sure he knows what he's doing. Safety's on the back end. Harrison Smith is getting a little long in the tooth. He's no longer, I think, a prime athlete, but he's still a very good player. Maybe one example as good as week two against the Cardinals. Cardinals went five wide, went empty, ran a QB draw, and they were running like cover four or something in the end zone. So Harrison Smith should have been able to come down and make the angle. And granted, it's Kyler Murray. He's, you know, a destroyer of angles with how quick he is. But like, Harrison Smith just had no chance. And so, you know, we're no longer seeing, I think he's what, 31 now. He's no longer in the prime of his career, but he's still an exceptionally smart player. He's still making good plays. I think he knows his limitations. And then sort of on the back end, when they play more, they mix up their coverage shells a lot. So it's, you know, whether it's when Smith is the box safety, he's, you think of him more as the box safety. Xavier Woods is sort of the free safety above. Good player, very aggressive. That works in his favor and out of his favor, because when he makes mistakes, they can be bad mistakes. He can be late to fit the run a little bit, or come downhill. He's not necessarily a, I don't know. He's sort of just a guy, I guess.
I get that.
He hasn't, had any huge. Exactly. And that's kind of how it's always been. It's Harrison Smith and a guy. So that tradition continues. He's he'll lay the wood. He'll have some good big plays if he's able to, you know, when his aggression is the right decision, he'll make some plays. But when his aggression is not the right decision, then, you know, your free safety is giving up a coverage bust for a touchdown or something. So, there's a lot of holes in the secondary. If I were game planning for him, I think that would be the play, the group I would circle in red ink to go after.
It'd be interesting to see if the Browns do uptick, right, to try to take advantage of that, because I think the base defense is a pretty strong group, especially if Barr is back playing. It's a pretty strong group collectively for Minnesota. So that is a game plan adjustment we could see. Also, to tie in another Brown, Greg Joseph is place kicking. So
there you go.
former Brown. So it all works in tandem. This is going to be a weird week, Nick. Both teams know this offense, because the offenses obviously run it and the defenses play against it all camp. Like, it's just going to be a chess match, and it's going to be a look back at the end of the game and say, look at this little wrinkle they threw at each other. And I imagine there's some bantering going on, and Sheldon wants to beat Cleveland and all that stuff, man. Like, it's the coaches all know each other, and it'll be fun. It should be a fun game above all else, and hopefully both teams come out of it healthy and can still make a good push forward. And Minnesota knows they need to win this game. It's vital for them. And Cleveland knows that they go out to L.A. to face the Chargers, come home for the Cardinals and Broncos. So they got a tough schedule creeping up on them, man. So they know they got to win every game that they can possibly win. So it should be a good battle. Nick, your insights here have been spectacular. I know the audience of this podcast will really appreciate them, man. We thank you so, so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jake. It's been a pleasure coming on. It's been so exciting watching the Browns have the success they've had, especially with sort of the Minnesota's homegrown boy. So really, really exciting. Love seeing them have the success they have. Hopefully they can keep it going forward every week except for this week.
That's right. Both sides are saying that. Get all the best except for this week. So thanks again, Nick.
Amen. And my pleasure.
Thanks again to Nick Olson for coming on the show, taking his time. That was a long interview, but I think you got a lot out of it. Hopefully you did. Reminder, the past 2 days of Twitch episodes, we had a Baker Film Room 2 days ago. That's for you to view on Twitch still if you want to go back and view it. And we had both John Stephenson for defense and Kyle Murphy for O-line, and they were really, really good interviews. So if you can go back and find those on Twitch, I urge you to do so, because you can learn a lot about the Browns' Week 2 performances. I had all 22 defense notes that went up yesterday. I'll have the all 22 offense notes up today. Get all the insights, all the data, all the clips you need to understand how the Browns' offense played. And I think it's great. I think it's really good, because it gives you insight on everything you need. And that's for OBR website subscribers only. So if you're not a website subscriber, I urge you to do so. Also posted a OBR, with our Browns film breakdown old hats, vintage hats from 3 years ago when we started. Never did get around to giving those away. We are going to give those away. I entered or put out a poll on my feed. Not a poll, but a requirement for how you enter to win one of the 10 hats. So you can do so over the coming days. We'll start giving those away next week. Should be good. Also, make sure you check out the OBR Weekly on Thursday Twitch, and we'll have the roundtable Friday. So those are your upcoming Twitch viewing opportunities. I appreciate your support as usual. Thanks for joining today's show and for all your support. We'll have John Colosimo tomorrow for our usual Fridays with John Colosimo episode. And then we'll have our prospect show we always have with Stephen Thomas breaking down his latest mock on Saturday. Thanks for joining us, guys. Have a great, great Thursday, and go Browns.